Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm Jason Sweat. A quick word before today's episode. If you're a Rails developer, there's a good chance you're writing tests. If you want to get better at writing tests, or if you're not currently writing tests and you want to learn how, go to codewithjason.com where you can find my free Ruby testing micro course. Now on to the episode. Welcome to the Rails with Jason podcast. I'm Jason Sweat. My guest today is my good friend, Charles Max Wood. Chuck,
hey
welcome
guys.
To the show.
Thanks.
Chuck, do you want to tell listeners about yourself?
Sure. So I have been a web developer since 2006-ish. I initially got into PHP programming because of a friend of mine. Then I went work for a company that did Rails. And, of course, I ran their tech support department. I wasn't actually a developer for them, but that's how I got into Rails. And I've been, doing it ever since. Worked jobs for the first 4 or 5 years of my career. And then when I got laid off that last time, I went freelance. And so I was freelance for another 4 or 5 years. And then the last 2 or 3 years, I've been full-time putting together podcasts on software development. Myself and James Edward Gray and a few other folks that you've probably heard of, we put together a show called Ruby Rogues about 8 years ago. Jason used to be a panelist on the show. And about 8 months later, we started JavaScript Jabber and Freelancer Show. About a year after that, we started iFreak Show. Actually, by we, I mean I started a lot of the rest of that with some friends of mine. Then I had a friend come to me and want to do an Angular show, so we started that up. And 2 years ago, we started my Ruby story, my Angular story, and my JavaScript story to highlight developers in Ruby, Angular, and JavaScript. And this last year, we started shows on Elixir, React, and Vue. That was a year ago in April. It's now June in 2019. And currently, we are getting ready to start shows on open source sustainability, blockchain, DevOps, .NET. That's the one I forgot when I was talking to you before the show was .NET. Mm. And a bunch more. So I have all this stuff going on. DevChat.tv is dedicated to making sure that there's a podcast for every programming community.
And how many podcasts do you have?
Currently, there are 14. We have another 5 that are either spinning up or about to take over or, something like that. So...
And is there like a central hub where people can go if they're interested in some of these podcasts?
Yeah, you go to devchat.tv. And if you go within the next week, it'll probably be the old site. And if you go after that, then I am updating the site. So it'll be newer. It'll be easier to find stuff on it. And I'm pretty excited about that. So
nice. I bet there's huge overlap with this listenership and listeners of Ruby Rogues. 8 years, that's almost a decade of Ruby podcasting.
Yeah, and I have been, I had a podcast before Ruby Rogues for about 2.5 years, so I have been podcasting for a decade.
Oh, I didn't know about the one before that. What was that one?
So it was called Rails Coach when I started it, and then after about 6 months of that, I took over a screencast series called Teach Me to Code.
I remember
Eric
that.
Berry. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I did that for a while. And while I was doing that, I decided to rebrand Rails Coach to Teach Me to Code. So it was the Teach Me to Code podcast, and I released about 200 episodes of that one, something like that. And did a bunch of videos on how to do Ruby on Rails for Teach Me to Code. Don't go look them up. They will not help you now with Rails. They're old.
Got it. So what we are going to talk about today is job related stuff. You were telling me before the show that you recently put together a book kind of helping developers with job search related stuff. Can you tell us about that?
Oh yeah. I finished a book a couple weeks ago. I left that off.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Initially I was going to call it Get a Coder Job. I've changed that. I'm going to call it Find Your Dream Developer Job. And, the reason is because when I started writing it, I was talking to a bunch of people who were graduating from boot camps and things like that. And they were going out there and putting the resume out everywhere, and they could not find a job at all. And especially one guy, I tried starting a meetup at Starbucks every Wednesday night. And so he'd come out every Wednesday night and I'd give him career advice. And of course, he followed about half of it. And so it didn't exactly pay off for him. And then once he did everything I told him to, he had a job within like a month.
Hey, taking half of somebody's advice is like way more than most people take advice.
I know, right? But he wasn't doing the important things because the important stuff is hard.
Yeah.
Life lesson, folks. The stuff that pays off, that's the hard stuff. That's the stuff that you didn't want to do.
Right?
Yeah, almost always. I mean, sometimes almost you get lucky, always. But most of the time, yeah. Yeah.
Very few anyway, shortcuts. Yeah.
So I started talking to more boot camp grads, you know, and they're 6 months, 9 months, a year out from having graduated, and they still don't have a job. And so I was like, well, this is what you have to do, because the conventional wisdom is you go send your resume everywhere and try to get an interview, and then you try and BS your way through the interview to get a job. And it just wasn't working for these folks.
So what did you tell them?
Well, most people make decisions with their gut, you know, off of feeling. And if you don't believe me, there's evidence out there for it, but then they'll justify it with whatever, you know, intellectually they can find. So essentially what you have to do is you have to make sure that they like you before you show up. And then you give them your resume and stuff to back up their decision. So it's kind of backward from the way that people usually think about it.
Okay. So you try to get your prospective employer to like you before you show up.
Yep.
And you're probably just about to say, how do you do that?
Yeah. So the first chapter in the book is essentially, how do you jumpstart your career search? And the first thing I tell people to do is to go find a users group near them and start going. Okay. And the reason for this is that you'll go, you'll meet people. And once you've met somebody in person and gotten to know them some, you immediately already have that like factor going, right? You go make some friends. And then if they work for a company that you think you'd like to work for, then they're more likely to refer you. They're more likely to go to bat for you once you go and try and find the job. And so it just pays off. The other thing you can do is you can go to the users group and you can say, hey, look, I'm sure I'm not the only beginner here. Or if you're experienced, I mean, just go offer to talk, right? But I'm sure I'm not the only beginner here. I'd like to give a quick talk on, you know, some basic concept in Ruby or Rails or something, right? Since this is a Rails show, JavaScript, Webpack, you know, maybe they don't know a whole lot about Webpacks. You go do some homework and figure out the basics of Webpack. And then you can explain what Webpacker is doing. But yeah, then you give the talk, you get noticed, you get liked, right? And then when they ask for your resume, you have to update your resume. That's number two.
Hang on, let me stop you there. Sorry, because you mentioned a couple of really good points. So like going to the user groups and making some friends there and stuff like that, that is super solid advice. And I can think of like, so I've been involved in the Grand Rapids development community kind of on and off for the last, I don't know, 10 years or whatever. And I've been around long enough to see people come in who have no experience, and they just kind of hang around for a long time. And it might take a couple years, but every one of those people, like every single one of those people who has hung around for a long time, they eventually make it. It's like almost impossible not to. It's that whole 90% of success is showing up kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is if they see your face, if they, you know, a lot of these groups have like a Slack room or an email list or something, right? And so they see your name float by a bunch of times. And then it's like, oh yeah, who is this? And then, oh, it's that guy from the Ruby group or that girl from the Ruby group and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then you have some recognizability.
Mm-hmm. And the thing you mentioned about giving talks, I think a lot of people feel like they have to wait until they know stuff to give a talk, but it's almost the opposite. Like there have been occasions where I don't know anything about something, and so I'll go research it and give a talk about it and very openly say like, hey, I have never touched this thing before starting to like put together this talk. So here's what I learned. And that's completely fine. And like, it's extremely unlikely that anybody's going to call you out and be like, hey, I wanted like a way more advanced talk from you than that. That never happens. So that's
exactly
That was another really good piece of advice, I thought. Okay, and you were transitioning into something else, but I forgot what it was.
Yeah, so then make sure your resume is up to date so that you have something to give them.
Yeah.
I have lots of advice on resumes. The main thing is if they need it right away, then you give them the resume you have prepared. If not, then go do some research on the company and then make sure that the stuff they care about is what's in the resume as close to the top as possible and give that to them instead.
Yeah, I've done a thing where like I'll have my like standard source resume, and then sometimes I'll tailor it for specific jobs to like emphasize the things that are relevant to that particular position.
You should always do that.
Yeah, no reason not to.
Yeah, I mean there are no rules. The rule is you make them want to hire you, and then they hire you. That's the rule.
Right.
And so if you are putting together the kind of resume that, you know, that says, hey, look, I know how to do all these things that you care about, then they're going to hire you. There you go. There's your rule.
Right. And there's nothing like dishonest or anything about that. For a long time, I've kept two different versions of my resume. One for development and the other for training. Because there was a period of time where I like was trying to form relationships with training companies and they would want a resume. And so I had a version of my resume that would like accentuate the parts of my experience that were relevant to that. It's kind of like if you take a picture of yourself from one angle and a picture of yourself from a different angle, it's still a picture of you. You're just accentuating different things for the purpose.
Yep, exactly. Well, I mean, they all are going to want slightly different things. So why not put your best foot forward right then and there?
Exactly. Okay, so Chuck, I think of, we talked about like going to meetup groups and talked about your resume and stuff. I kind of think of the whole job search as a funnel where first you have to get the leads. You put the leads in the funnel, and then, you know, let's say you have like 100 job leads you found, maybe 10 of those turn into interviews, and then you get 2 or 3 offers from that or something like that. First, do you think about it in a similar way? And how do you recommend people find their jobs to apply to, or how do you get yourself in that position where you're giving somebody your resume?
So there are a lot of things. By the way, what you described was kind of the quintessential marketing funnel. And a job search is not marketing. It's sales. So let me tell you what the difference is. And then I can explain what you do to actually get in front of them this way, right? Because users group is one way, but if they're not at the users group, then what do you do, right? So sales is, I have a prospect that I want to sell something to, right? I do this with sponsorships, podcast sponsorships all the time, right? There's this company. I think they'd be really great to sponsor devchat.tv. Or there's this company, and I think it'd be really great to work for them. Okay. And by the way, there's a whole chapter in the book about figuring out whether or not a company's a good match for you. And you should totally go through that exercise with every company you consider. And if they don't match up, unless you're desperate for a job, don't apply. Okay. Because you're doing sales. You're going after the companies that you want. You're not just throwing your net out there and trying to find everybody. I call that spray and pray, basically, is you put your resume out everywhere, right? And then you get a whole bunch of leads, like you said, and then you wind up coming in for, you know, 10 or so interviews, and hopefully one of them offers you a job. But honestly, the way to do it is actually to sell them on the fact that you're the right employee, right? So you're not doing anything sneaky. I think there's a little bit of a misconception about what sales is. Sales is making sure that what you want and what they want align, and then giving it to them. That's what sales is.
Yeah, a lot of people, including my past self, thought sales was like trying to persuade somebody, trying to argue somebody into wanting something they don't want or something like that. But it's not that. The way I define it today is like, sales is just asking and answering the question, are we a good fit? Should we work together?
Yeah. So if you have to bully them or lie to them, you're doing it wrong. That's not sales. That's fraud. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so what we're talking about here then is, all right, so if I'm going to do sales, then I'm going to do targeted things to get this company's attention. So what do you do? Well, companies are made out of people. I don't know if you know that. They're not made out of bricks and mortar. They're not made out of, you know, big skyscrapers. They're made out of people.
And so I love that phrasing, companies are made out of people. And you don't get hired by a company, you get hired by a person.
It's true. I mean, sometimes it's the HR person and the manager. And so there's more than one person involved. But ultimately, somebody's making a decision, right? And so it's a person. And so, yeah, you want to get in front of that person. And one of the best ways to get in front of people is to get in front of other people that they know if you can't get directly in front of them, right?
Wait, say that again.
So it's people that they know, like coworkers, past coworkers, friends, bosses, advisors, you know, people that they know, people who are in their orbit. You convince them that you'd be a good fit for, you know, the team that this person is making the decision on, and then get a referral.
So you're saying, like, let's say you, Chuck, are like the director of engineering at some organization that I want to work at, but I don't know you, but maybe I know somebody else who does know you, and I can say, hey, can you maybe give me an intro to Chuck or something like that? That's the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. But you don't want to just go in and ask, right? It feels kind of weird if you don't know them. If you know them well, that's a different conversation, right? Because then it's, hey, you know, I realize that you know such and such a person that works at this company, and I've been trying to, you know, I'd like to work for that company, so can you introduce me? But if they're complete strangers, get to know them first. You know, do a little bit of work, take them to lunch. Hey, I'm trying to get a job at this company, and, you know, so-and-so's the team lead, and they're the ones making the hiring decision. And so, you know, what can you tell me about them? You know, but find other things in common too. I mean, talk about your kids, talk about the football team or the baseball team or the soccer team, you know, be a real person with them. And that actually, in a lot of cases, goes further than proving that you're the technical genius that you think you have to be in order to get that job. But then what they can do is the next time they see that person, then they'll be like, oh, I met the coolest person that, you know, does what you do. And they're looking for a job. And you really ought to talk to them, right? And so you make them want to introduce you to them.
That makes a lot of sense.
There are a lot of other ways to get their attention. I mean, a few of them, I mean, podcasts are a good way. Blogs are a good way. You know, and then what you do is you share those in places where they're going to be looking. So if, you know, they tend to be on Facebook, or they're part of certain Facebook groups, or, you know, they follow certain people on Twitter, you can get those people to tweet your post.
Let's unpack some of that stuff. So you mentioned podcasting. You've done a bit of podcasting.
Yeah.
It's not
the most effective way, but some people, it's the least personal way, I guess.
So there's kind of maybe let's just list out some of the options real quick. So like there's ways you can market yourself by putting, I hate the word content, but putting content out there. Mm-hmm. You can write blog posts. You can write at the extreme end of the spectrum, you can write a whole book if you want to. You can put out YouTube videos of programming related stuff. You can do podcasts. You can give talks at local meetups. And then there's blog posts and there's books, there's local meetup talks, and then there's like talks at national conferences and stuff like that, and everything in between. Anything I'm missing?
Surprisingly, you can also, with platforms like Instagram, you can create an Instagram account where you share frequently the kinds of things that people are going to want to follow. And then what I found is hashtags on Instagram are a terrific way to get noticed. So
if people do like coding related Instagram,
you totally can. It's crazy. I'm just getting into this now, but it's crazy. And I could talk for the rest of the time about this, but I think I would waste a lot of people's time by doing it. But essentially what you would do is, so you write up just a real quick meme about, you know, string.reverse is, you know, and you know, put together something clever and put it up, or, you know, you can put up to a 1 minute video on Instagram. Mm. And so you just put up the 1 minute clip of, hey, I learned this thing real quick, right? And so you show a shortcut in Visual Studio Code or Vim or Emacs or something, right? And just get those together. But then you hashtag it with Ruby and with whatever, maybe even with the company name, right? And just to get their attention and see if you can get noticed that way.
Got it. Yeah, I'm so like anti social media that I've never spent like any time on Instagram. I have an Instagram account that I haven't put a single thing on there. But that's pretty interesting.
Anti-social, Jason.
What's that?
You shouldn't be antisocial, Jason.
Yeah, just antisocial media.
I know.
I think social media is kind of antisocial.
I that's understandable, but yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense though. If Instagram allows videos, then you can put videos on there. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So the way I look at this stuff is like, if you're in a job interview and let's say there's five candidates and they all seem about equally as good, they all seem like above the threshold of being acceptable. But let's say you are the one candidate who like you have a blog and you have maybe like a few videos you've put together and you've done a couple meetup talks. That shows that what I think that shows the employer is that you care about what you do and you must have some level of competence if you're right. Teaching other people.
Yeah. So my second programming job, my first programming job, I worked for a consultancy. They laid me off. So I went home, told my wife, happy anniversary, because we'd been married for like 3 years to the day. Happy anniversary. I got laid off, right? Put my resume up. You know, I basically did what I tell everybody not to do. I put my resume on a job board. But I got a call back. I drove out to Orem, Utah, did the interview. And about 20 minutes later, I got a phone call. I was still on my way home. I got a call from my new boss, and he asked me when I could start, and it was the next day. That's and the reason awesome. Was because at that point, I had started doing Teach Me to Code screencasts, and I had started doing I was doing the Rails Coach podcast at the time. And so he had gone and listened to two episodes of that and watched one of my videos, and then he called me up. It was a no-brainer for him at that point to
call me. Oh, that's awesome. I remember you telling me that story once in the past, but I don't know if I knew about the Teach Me to Code portion of it.
Yep. And then we went out to dinner for our anniversary. So
nice. So that was like that made the day. It took the day from like a bummer to a win.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we've got this mortgage and two little kids. What do we do, right?
Yeah, that must have been a roller coaster of a day.
Yep. But yeah, those tend to work more. I mean, if you can get the content in front of somebody, then you'll get noticed by them. But those tend to work more as social proof. If you want to actually get noticed by an employer, you've got to do a lot of the things that people don't do anymore. So, for example, you can mail them something. And if you do a little bit of homework, you can probably find out if they're a sports fan or if there's some hobby they have or something like that. And then just send them some little nifty thing that they can put on their desk, you know, that, you know, it can be a $5 thing, right? But you just put a note in it that says, you know, hey, I understand you like this, you know.
I like to mail people clocks. Then they get the package and they hear the tick, tick, tick. Oh, it must be a clock.
Yeah. That's what I think. Tick, tick, tick. I've seen too many movies. Anyway.
Have you heard of people actually sending things in the mail and like getting job leads that way?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but you really have to nail it. You have to hit something that they're really passionate about. And you kind of want to make it gimmicky, but not too cheesy, which is kind of a fine line to hit. But that does work. And I find that a lot of these things, again, if you do the work that nobody else is going to do, you're going to get results that nobody else gets, right? And that includes getting hired. Another one that I've done is I like to go on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn, you can do a search for the company and find their employees. So you find somebody that has the job that you want at that company. Now that you've done the research and you know they're a good match. And then you just send them a message on LinkedIn or use a service like hunter.io to get their email address. And then just ask them if you can buy them lunch and ask them questions about the company.
Yeah, I found that people are usually open to that, open to getting especially together for lunch or whatever. Yeah.
I'll buy you lunch and I want to ask you questions. They're good with that. But then you can get the inside scoop, right? So then when you show up, you actually know what they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. One other thing that I've done and I've seen other people do to great effect is you show up at the office with your resume in hand. Just unannounced. And I usually do this about 11:30 in the morning. And the reason is because I want to go to lunch with them. But ulterior motives, I also, so I go in and I ask the receptionist or whoever, hey, look, I'm applying here. I'd really like to work here, but I'd also like to kind of, you know, get a walkthrough of the space. You know, can I walk through and see your office? A lot of companies are just going to be like, sure, whatever. The other thing you can do is if you have your resume in hand, you can say, hey, I'm applying to this position. You know, Jason Sweat is the team lead, and I was hoping I could just walk back and put this on this desk, right? And what you're hoping is that Jason Sweat is sitting at his desk so that you walk into his office and you're like, yeah, they let me come back here and drop this off. And then you can sit there and BS with him for a few minutes and kind of build some rapport. You're not there to prove anything. You don't have to give him a sales pitch. You don't have to, like, you know, twist their arm behind their back. You know, just talk about, you know, if they have pictures of their kids on their desk or...
You're just there to build the relationship a little
bit. Yeah, exactly. You know, you want them to know who you are. And so you just show up, hey, I'm Chuck. You know,
this reminds me of a story from I went to a conference, Windy City Rails in Chicago in like 2012 or something like that. And, I'm like too ADD to sit and watch a whole conference talk most of the time. And so like, I just kind of wandered the halls and talked to people and stuff like that. There was a guy, from an agency in Chicago. It's pretty well known now. But at the time, I had never heard of it, and I saw their booth, and I kind of talked to the guy. And the vendors there, the people at the booth, they're always bored because like nobody wants to talk to them.
I want to talk to them. I want their money.
Yeah. So I went and I was talking to the guy, and he was a pretty cool guy, and we had a good conversation. And then somehow I ended up visiting their office. I think they had some kind of event where they had like a couple talks or something like that. And I just came by and I hung out and like ate some food and hung out with like had a meal with the guy I met. And we kind of became friends. And then later on, he's like, hey, do you want to work here? And I was like, oh, yeah. And so we started the interview process, and then they gave me their coding challenge and I failed it. So I didn't get the job. But the illustration is that you can get job leads that way. By the way, it was one of those like algorithmic type things. It was the knapsack problem. Okay. And I just couldn't do it. I never have been able to do those.
Yeah. Pro tip. If you want to know what their interview questions are, a lot of times that information's on glassdoor.com.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, could have saved me some frustration, maybe.
Well, I don't know how long ago this was, but yeah, Glassdoor's been around for a while, and they have information on all kinds of stuff about the company, benefits, interview questions, what it was like to work there, reviews by employees. I mean, you have to take some of that with a grain of salt, because if they left because they were angry or they were fired, a lot of times they don't put complimentary things on there, and so, you know, you get kind of a biased view. But go read through a bunch of them, see what the rating is and stuff like that. You get a lot of ideas.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier. We talked about writing blog posts and putting out videos and stuff like that. I call those authority pieces. Mm-hmm. And you said that those work as social proof.
Yeah, that's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, and I found that like those kinds of things can help attract opportunities. But probably the more like likely use that you're going to get out of it is they will give you a boost when you find yourself already in a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, I will say, so my friend John Sonmez from simpleprogrammer.com, he's been writing blog posts on simpleprogrammer.com for a long time. And at one point, I think he'd been blogging for a year or two, maybe three. He got a phone call from somebody who was reading his blog, and they just offered him a job on the spot that he wound up taking.
Wow. You said he took the job?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. I had a similar thing happen.
The spot, and yeah, he asked him a few questions and then wound up taking the job.
I had a similar thing happen. Somebody emailed me out of the blue last fall. They had found a blog post of mine. I had written a blog post about AWS and Rails. And if you're listening, hi, Martin. Mm-hmm. He found a blog post of mine and sent me an email, and he was like, hey, I'm trying to put this Rails application on AWS, having a tough time. Can you help me do it? And long story short, he and I have been working together for like the last 10 months. And that's been a great relationship. It took me about 10 years of blogging before that ever happened, but that kind of stuff does work. I had another occasion in 2016 where somebody reached out to me. They're like, hey, there's this class that happens in Detroit. They had an instructor like back out at the last minute. They need an instructor. A mutual friend introduced us because this mutual friend had seen me give talks and stuff at a local meetup. And he's like, oh, Jason gives talks. He apparently teaches coding. So he connected me, and then I've been teaching that class for 3 years.
Yep. I had an experience where this is when I was freelancing, but I was working freelance, and I've been involved in the local Ruby community for a long time. And there's a fairly large book company called Deseret Book that's based in Salt Lake City. They mostly sell stuff for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So it's all based around, teachings of the church leaders there. But and it's owned by the church, I believe. But anyway, they have a system where they were providing like ebooks of all the books that they publish, and they have a bunch of brick and mortar stores around. And so they needed this code written. And so somebody was asking around, well, do you know any freelancers? And, you know, everybody said, Chuck's freelancer. And yeah.
So it's the okay, same. Okay. So, right? how do those people know you, and how do they know that about you?
Because I'd been going to the users group for years.
Got it.
I mean, all of this stuff really just comes back to those relationships, right? And some of the relationships are going to be one way, like blog readers, until they're not, until they reach out to you, right? And then it's two way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of that is just going to come out of going to the conferences and getting to know people, or going to the users groups and getting to know people, or being involved in a forum or things like that. And what you may find is that the companies that you're targeting aren't necessarily going to work out, but somebody's going to notice you on some of that other stuff. And so you are hedging your bets a little bit by being out in public with some of this stuff.
Okay, so Chuck, you live in Lehigh, Utah.
Yep.
And that the like greater Salt Lake City area, it's not like New York or San Francisco or something like that. It's relatively small. I live in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, relatively small. The actual place I live is a village of 500 people.
Right.
So what if somebody's listening to this and they're like, but I live like in a small town. There's like barely a development community here. What do you tell those people?
Go on meetup.com, put in your zip code and see. I've had people from like tiny countries in South America, and they're like, there's no users group here. I promise you there's no users group here. I go in meetup.com and I type in the town that they live in, and it turns out that they're 20 minutes from users group. I mean,
so there probably is one.
There probably is. And that's not universally true, but it's true often enough to where it's worth going and looking, right?
And you know what you can do if there's not one?
Start one.
Exactly.
So I'm going to throw out another tip. There's a talk that was given by Miles Forrest at Cascadia Ruby like 3 or 4 years ago. And you can just look it up, but he actually started a users group in this teeny tiny town in British Columbia. I mean, there's like nothing there, but yeah, they get together in a coffee shop there in, I can't remember the name of the little town, but they're like an hour or two outside of Vancouver. And yeah, they get together at the coffee shop every week and hack.
Nice.
So you can do it. You just have to be willing to do it.
Yeah. I've organized meetups before, and you know, it's not a lot of work if you don't make it a lot of work. Like, you don't have to commit to having like food brought in and all that kind of stuff. You can just have people get together in a room and talk, and you don't have to have like 3 presenters per meetup or anything. It doesn't have to be a big to-do. As long as you find like 1 speaker per meeting, that's pretty much enough. And I've been to plenty of meetup type things where they don't have speakers. They just get together and chat and code and stuff like that.
Yeah. The other thing is, though, is that especially for the longer running groups, the people who organize them tend to have a good pulse of the area and what's going on there. And so if you help them organize, or you are organizing groups or things like that, then what'll happen is when a company is looking and they're being smart about it, they'll go to the users group and see who's there, and they'll talk to the organizer to see who they can hire. And so if you're the organizer, or you're close to the organizer and you're looking for a job and they know it, then you can get a referral that way.
Yeah, being the organizer of a meetup group gives you really good visibility. Yes. Everybody knows who you are. They kind of assume you're kind of like a big deal, which helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing with conference organizing, except on a larger scale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true. That is something that I don't see myself personally ever doing, because everybody who's done it, who I've talked to, said it's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, I'm talking to somebody right now, but it's not a programming conference, so I won't go into it. But it definitely is. I have a few friends that have organized conferences, and they do it every year and they love it. And it's not a big payday. They do it for the community. But I'll tell you, they get paid back in other ways. Like, and just to give you an example, so NGConf was in April, and they do it at the Grand America Hotel here in Salt Lake City. But I mean, they have like 2,000 people that fly in from everywhere, right? Because it's the big Angular conference. The Angular core team's there. Two of the guys that organize it are Joe Eames and Aaron Frost. And they're both on JavaScript Jabber and Adventures in Angular as well. But they both had companies that had booths at the conference. And boy, I'll tell you, those were the most popular booths, because everybody knew who they were and they wanted to go talk to the people at the booth to see what they were doing, right? Mm. And so it does. It pays off big. So Joe is starting up Thinkster.io. Well, not starting up. He's rebooting Thinkster.io with fresh content and things like that. So if you're looking for, I think they're doing Rails courses, among others.
Is Thinkster.io kind of like a programming screencast course kind of thing?
Yep. Yep. So they're putting, he's been training all of his course authors, and they'll probably have some content in a serious way here in like 3 to 6 months. But then Aaron Frost, he has a development consulting company. And so people were coming by to chat with him and chat with his business partner and all of that stuff too. And so, yeah, if you're organizing the conference and you have a presence that's easy to find there, yeah, you'll get paid back in other ways. So.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those things are totally, totally worth it. It's just kind of a matter of how much work you want to put in. Yeah. What I've been doing over the last while, I've been doing like everything. I've been doing podcasting, YouTube videos, blogging. I wrote an ebook. Mm-hmm. I spoke at 7 conferences in the span of 9 months, which I wouldn't really recommend, but that's what I did. Let's see. I think that's all, but that's a lot of stuff. And honestly, it hasn't resulted yet in a lot of like people coming to me and saying like, hey, please come work for me. But I think that kind of stuff takes time. But again, like if I find myself, if my current working relationship goes away for some reason unexpectedly, and I'm like, oh, I need to find something else. Next time I find myself in a conversation with a prospective employer or whatever, and I say, oh yeah, I'm the guy who does all this stuff, that's going to go a long way toward making that happen.
Yeah. Well, the other trick is you've got this podcast, right? And so let's say that you want to get hired by, let's just pick a company everybody's heard of. Let's say you want to get hired by Amazon, right? So what you do is you don't send them your resume. What you do is you email the guy that is going to make the hiring decision, and you say, hey, do you want to come on my show and talk about Ruby on AWS? And then afterward, as you're chatting, you just mentioned casually, oh yeah, well, you know, I am looking for a job, you know, I'd like to do, you know, something, 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 whatever it is that they need on their team, and then see if he bites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great approach. And I would recommend like maybe even waiting a little bit, like do the episode week later, whatever, when it goes live, email them, and then a little bit later be like, oh hey, by the way, I'm kind of putting my feelers out for a job, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I know you're hiring, here's my resume, you know, can we just chat about it for a minute and make sure that it's a good fit? he feels like he owes you anyway because you had him on your show. And so the law of reciprocity, hard word, sorry.
It is a hard word.
Says that he's going to come back and say, yeah, sure, I'll do you a favor and help you out.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of those things, it's like the more you are just helpful in general, mm-hmm. I don't believe in like karma or anything like that, but in just in not like any kind of super, not supernatural, paranormal, whatever, in not that kind of way, the universe will pay you back.
See, I believe in the law of the harvest.
What's that?
What you sow is what you reap. And so if you put enough down, some of it is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you're out there doing the work, you know, if you're out there putting content out, if you're out there, you know, writing the blog posts and doing the YouTube videos and promoting it on social media and, you know, kind of being everywhere, eventually some of it's going to bear fruit.
Do people ever go to you, Chuck, and say like, hey, come work as a developer at where we work and stuff like that? I know that you've said in our conversations in the past that like if you mention on your show that you're looking for freelance work or something like that, that's generated leads. Do people ever just say like, hey, do you want to come work with us?
Yep, they do. And I politely decline. I'm happy where I am. But yeah, that happens a lot. If I don't get a request to apply to somewhere once a week, then the world is broken.
How does that usually go? They just send you an email kind of thing?
Yep.
And not just like the regular recruiter spam that everybody gets, right?
So about half of it's that, and the other half is, yeah, people that want me to come do some kind of work for them.
Got it.
And you know what? At this point, I've got so much going on with the podcast that I can't take on freelancing or full-time work doing something else.
Oh, yeah.
There are a few other things I just want to throw out here for your audience, because I think they're, and by the way, I'm giving away my best stuff. Go buy the book, but I'm giving away my best stuff on this show. The other things that you can do are just to put them out there. A lot of companies, especially the bigger ones, if they have a community around their product, a lot of them put on events. So go volunteer at the event. You know,
what kind of events? How do you find out about this stuff?
So let me give you an example. There's a company here in Salt Lake called it Instructure. And they have a product called Canvas. They have another one called Bridge. But basically, they're learning management systems. One's focused around corporate and the other one's focused around the education industry. And every year they have a conference in Salt Lake called InstructureCon. Pluralsight does it too. They have an author summit and they have a big conference in Salt Lake, right? And so if I wanted to work for either of those companies, you can buy a ticket and you can rub shoulders with people, but if you volunteer, they'll typically let you in for free. And then you get to know the people who are setting up the whole event. And so you get kind of a different level of access for that. And a lot of times you get some kind of payoff there too. And so anyway, by offering your time and expertise there at the end of the show, if you walk up with a staff shirt on, walk up to the CEO or whoever your boss would be, or somebody who's speaking, you know, if you're manning a room, you can ask, oh, well, you know, can I help out in this room, right? Because it's the room that the person you want to talk to is going to be in, or things like that. You're going to get a face-to-face, you know, with them. And then you can just talk to them and say, hey, I really love what you guys do. I'm really interested in working with you in this way. And yeah, that pays off really well too. The other one that I wanted to throw out there is, and Instructure does this too, but a lot of other companies have open source that they sponsor and build. And so if you make a lot of contributions to those, then you can also get their attention that way. Because if your name keeps coming up on pull requests that they accept, somebody's going to know who you are. And so that'll pay off as well. So if you wanted to work for Platforma Tech on like Devise, then go make a bunch of contributions to Devise. Or go write a couple of plugins for Devise. If you want to work for Instructure here in Salt Lake, you know, go make contributions to their open source version of Canvas, or go write a couple of plugins for Canvas. I mean, that kind of thing. Again, it'll get their attention, especially if it becomes widely used.
Do you have any tips for getting started contributing to open source projects if you haven't done that kind of thing before?
So the conventional wisdom is to go and contribute to the docs. it's not bad advice in the sense that that's the stuff that those folks won't want to do, and it'll give you a chance to work through the code and get familiar with it before you start making contributions. You'll also get a feel for what kinds of things they're looking for in the project. So that is a good way to go. But if you're a crack coder already, so for beginners, I think the documentation is a good way to go. If you're already competent and you have a good feel for what the project is about, then go find one of their issues and solve it. Submit a pull request. I mean, it's not that crazy hard. And the other thing is a lot of people tend to get this idea that like the guys that wrote NPM or Ruby Gems or whatever are these geniuses somehow. But it turns out that they're coders just like us. And a lot of times the people who are making the biggest contributions are just the people who are willing to do it. I think one example on this one is Eileen, you should tell. I don't know if you know her. She's on the Rails core team.
Yeah.
I think we had her on Ruby Rogues about a year after she joined the Rails core team, which meant that her programming career was exactly 2 years long because mm-hmm. she'd only been a Ruby programmer for like a year when she was put on the Rails core team. And the reason was she went in and she made a bunch of contributions to the Rails repo. So she figured out what was going on. She figured out where she could contribute. She fixed a bunch of bugs and contributed a couple of features. And so they brought her on the Rails core team, and then Basecamp hired her.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's quite the win to get hired by Basecamp.
Basecamp, they like to hire newer developers because you don't have as many bad habits, and David can show you how he wants things done.
That is an idea that I can respect. I've long thought that if I find myself in the position to like build up a team, I would want to find people who are just super smart and be able to like indoctrinate them with my beliefs. So we're all kind of thinking the same way, which not everybody agrees that that's good. I think it is good. At least when everybody agrees with me, I think that's a great thing. Rather than hiring people who have like 20 years of experience and they have super strong opinions that all conflict with each other.
Yep. Yeah, I like it as well. We had a long discussion with David last time he was on Ruby Rogues about that. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me too. I mean, the first couple of people you bring in, that's going to be a little bit time intensive because it's just you showing them how you want it done. But once you're past that and you've got your team on board with helping other people come up to speed in the way that we do things, then a lot of that falls to them and not to you. And you still are getting what you want. So,
yeah.
But yeah, just getting involved with the things that the company's involved in without directly having to interface with them or walk in the office door is a good way to go. Another thing that I've done or I've seen people do is you walk into the office, so you get to know somebody there. And then you ask them if you can just come work from the empty desk for a day or so. Just, hey.
Yeah, I've done that not because I was looking for a job there, but just because like I genuinely needed a place to work for the day. Yeah. It's a good way to just get to know the people there.
Yep. Because people walk by your desk too and be like, who's that guy? Oh, well, he's just working here for the day, you know, but he's great. You know, he said he wanted to meet people, so you can go talk to him. But yeah. Then if people get to like you, then when you're not there after 3 days, then they're going to be like, so where'd he go? Right? Can we get him back?
So. Yeah. Yeah. Like you said before, it's all about making, well, the kind of way, the way that I look at it is it's like you plant seeds of friendship and then you mm-hmm. go make friends with people. And then it might take a couple years or whatever. But then you have these friends who all know you and like you and they work at places and they can help you get a job.
Yeah, I'll tell you, after my second programming job, yeah, pretty much any place I applied to after that, I was talking to my friends. They'd tell me they were hiring. And so I'd give them my resume and they would take it in and go to bat for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of have gone in three stages in my career. Like it started off, I would just go to job boards and stuff like that. And I was talking with strangers. Then later on when I would need a job or like a new freelance gig or whatever, I would go to my friends and say, mm-hmm. hey, do you know anybody I should talk to? And now I rarely find myself in those situations. It's more like somebody comes to me And that's how it goes. And each one of those things is better than the previous one.
Yep, 100%.
So Chuck, I want to make sure people have a chance to, first of all, know where your book can be found and all that kind of stuff. And I'm, I guess let's go. Can you tell people about the book, and then just anything else you want to tell people about where they can find you online, that kind of thing?
Yep, absolutely. So the book is, you can find it at getacoderjob.com. It'll take you to a page on devchat.tv where you can buy the book. I'm also working on a video course for that. It's not ready yet. You can pre-order it now, and then, you know, you'll get it as it comes out. And that's kind of the focus there. And yeah, the rest of it just talks about, we walk you through how to figure out what jobs are a good match for you. You know, so it's basically, okay, here's how you figure out what you're looking for. And then here's how you figure out if the company matches. And then it'll walk you through, the process of getting noticed, the process of getting into the interview, how to interview, and then how to get hired. There's a little bit in there about salary negotiations and a bit in there about offer letters, but I kind of defer some of that to Josh Duty and his Fearless Salary Negotiations book. And then all of our podcasts are on devchat.tv. That's a domain. It's also the name of the network. So you can just go check that out, devchat.tv. If you check it out, I don't know when this goes live, but if you check it out before about the 20th of June, you're probably going to see our old site. And then after that, I have reworked the entire website. And so it'll be easier to find stuff and see what you want. There's a new programmer section there, and I think there's a career section there. So if either of those line up for you, you can check those out, or you can just go check out our individual shows.
Chuck, you know what just occurred to me after all these years of knowing about it? Devchat.tv is not TV at all. It's podcast stuff. Is it because it's based in Transylvania?
I think it's actually Tivoli or some Tuvalu or some country out in
the, I guess that would make sense since Transylvania is not a real place.
Yeah. So the .tv, so back 10 years ago when I started podcasting, I had a bunch of friends start podcast networks, and I don't think .fm was available yet. And so everybody latched onto .tv. And so I got it way back when .tv was the podcast network kind of deal. I think 5x5 is 5x5.tv. They might have 5x5.com at this point. But yeah, so that's kind of where that came from.
Well, it's a fun little bit of devchat.tv trivia.
Yeah. I mean, these days, a lot of people are doing the .fm for podcasts or just having a .com. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, dear listener, you should go get Chuck's book. Chuck definitely knows what he's talking about when it comes to getting jobs and all that stuff. I've known Chuck a long time, and we've talked about this stuff in the past. And just to be clear, I don't get any kind of benefit or kickback or anything by recommending Chuck's stuff. I just genuinely think that it's good. And I'll put the link in the show notes, but one more time, that domain is
getacoderjob.com.
Getacoderjob.com. Well, Chuck, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.